This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Damian Woody joins us right now. And Wood, let's begin there, man. First, just your thoughts on that trade before we get to any other fallout from it.
Oh man, I mean, this is a man that got traded twice in a season, going from Jacksonville to Minnesota, and now Minnesota to Baltimore.
So is that going from hell to hell to heaven?
Yeah, man. I mean, this is a great situation for him, man, because, you know, that Baltimore defense, particularly that front seven, man, they got a lot of really good players up there. And Wink Martindale, he knows how to, you know, draw up defenses and put guys in position to really maximize their potential. So this is a great – I mean, he fell into a great situation with that environment in Baltimore, man. And you have to wonder what's – you know, Minnesota seemed like a situation where – you know, they might be looking towards 2021 when the salary cap is going to be an issue for a lot of teams. So it's kind of a head scratcher, but Baltimore is clearly going for it.
Now, the first thing we think of all the time, because we're a New York show, is the New York teams. And both teams obviously are absent of an edge rusher. The Jets haven't had one since John Abraham. They never seem to get them. So, but I don't know if the Jets are in a place at this moment to make that move. The Giants, however, are in a terrible division. And it's as bad as they are at 1-5, the Eagles are all banged up. The Cowboys are a disaster. And Washington's not even trying to win. So the idea is this. And Bart brought this up. They gave up a third-round pick for Leonard Williams last year, and that didn't make any sense. Can you explain why the Giants wouldn't have tried to be aggressive and make this move for them and maybe shake up that division a little bit?
You know, that's a really good question. My only thought is, I think Leonard Williams is playing on a franchise tag, and, you know, that would be another hefty salary that you have to take on, or a hefty contract that you have to take on if you're the New York Giants, and we don't know what 2021 looks like, so maybe that's a reason why they didn't decide to pursue it. But I think what Bart was talking about is absolutely right. You gave a third-round pick for Leonard Williams, who's basically a run stopper, and here's a guy in Njokwe who's 25 years old and has 45.
Yeah, it's like 45 sacks. 45 for like over 10 a year.
Yeah. Pass rushes are a premium. They're a premium. And that's the one area that the Giants, they don't have a pass rusher. Think about how this guy could help Leonard Williams, or, you know, those interior defensive tackles when you got a guy who can threaten the edge. So, you know, again, I don't know the reasoning why. Maybe it's because of the salary cap for next year. But, I mean, if I were the Giants, I would at least, you know, been in some type of discussions knowing how terrible my division is.
And that's what I'm talking about. So I wonder if Gettleman's just out of the loop. You know what I mean? Like, is he out of the loop? Because I understand that Baltimore may have a relationship with Minnesota because they traded the kicker to him last year. But to me, it just shows the difference in some general managers playing checkers and some playing chess. Because, you know, you look at what DeCoste did last year with turning that kicker that he gave to Minnesota that they were going to cut anyway because they have two outstanding specialists. And then that kicker in turn got traded to the Jets. But then the Ravens took that same pick and made that Calais Campbell. So that's what I'm just trying to point out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying.
Some people, like you said, Bart. Some people are playing chess and some people are playing checkers.
And so that's what I'm saying. So, like, I know. Listen, this team is. I think that Joe Judge is a good coach, and I think he's going to be well in this league. I think he's going to try to figure some things out, and this team is still in the process. But, you know, for me, you think about a lot of the moves that Gettleman made and didn't make. I wonder if Gettleman is the right man for the job, and if he's current enough to understand how to get transactions done and how to use what the old school did, but also what the new school did, and kind of marry the two. I just don't know if he's too far, you know, to one side and not the other.
And let me add to that too, Wood, is that Jordan Renan, who covers the Giants, sent me a message while we were talking about this at the start of the show, and he said, from what he understands, the Giants didn't see Ngakoue as a good fit for the way they play, for their system.
A good fit. I mean, last summer, I got to tell you, man, that really irks me so much, man, about when you talk about good fit for our system. every good coach I've ever played with, played under, it's not the system, it's the players. And then you craft the system to fit what the players do best. This whole nonsense of, well, he doesn't fit our system. Is he a good player? If he's a good player, you find ways to utilize him. Last time I checked, where's the pass rush coming from the Giants' edge? They have none. You can't tell me Njoku is not a good player, because he is. He's a young pass rusher, 25 years old. Bart, you talked about it. Has like 45 sacks in that amount of time. But he doesn't fit our system.
So
it's just so backwards thinking.
So point, counterpoint, right, D-Wood? So, you know, the point is, Renown was saying he doesn't fit. Okay, maybe they used to send him in a 4-3 with Jacksonville, and then seeing him in a 4-3 with Minnesota. Okay, sometimes, you know, you may not always understand something, but you trust the people that's making the decision. Okay, I think that the Ravens is a very well-ran organization. Make a lot of good decisions. They've been successful. Expansion team of 1996 has won two Super Bowls in its existence. Eric DeCoste is considered one of the better executives in the league. Why can he fit in their 3-4, but he can't fit in yours? That's what I don't understand. So obviously we have to make a decision and figure out, who do we trust more? Do we trust Eric DeCoste more and the Baltimore Ravens organization as far as being able to evaluate talent and understand how to utilize talent, being that they took a quarterback? Remember that Gettleman said he didn't see a franchise quarterback in that draft. All we got is one that's won an MVP and another that is in consideration for winning an MVP and Josh Allen. So you tell me, who am I supposed to believe, D-Wood?
Damn sure, I would go with the guy down in Baltimore. Baltimore is consistently, year in and year out, one of the better teams in the National Football League. So, I mean, that question is just easy to answer. I hate this whole system thing. You know, it's just really good organizations find ways to utilize a player's abilities. Regardless of system, your system can evolve and change. Okay, but acquiring good players is hard to do. Just hearing that just frustrates me.
It just brings us to, you know, Adam Gase saying, you know, having that issue with Le'Veon Bell, and just clearly that Le'Veon Bell just didn't fit the way he wanted to play because that's not how he plays. And we had that same argument. It's like, man, when you have a really good player, you find a way to make him fit, because the object is to win with the pieces, you know, that you have. It's so damn frustrating. Let's move on, though, in the Giants realm, though, because tonight, Thursday Night Football starts week 7. Well, we'll get to the Cowboys. No, we heard Woody on the Cowboys. But before we do that, tonight's game is Giants-Eagles. The NFC East is a disaster. I mean, it's really a mess. Does this game in your mind, like, first of all, you watch because it's football, right? I know it's one of those games where you're like, do you really look forward to this? But still, the Eagles, to me, are the team that if you want to put money on anybody, it would be them to come out of this division. That makes tonight's game pretty damn important for a really banged-up team.
Yeah, listen, Boy, how the NFC East has just fallen off a cliff. Mm-hmm. The once mighty NFC East, and you're right. Of all the teams in that division, you would think, just off of pedigree, the Philadelphia Eagles should not only win this game but win this division. And I know they've suffered a ton of injuries, you know, on the offensive line, the skill position. I mean, they are as banged up as any other team in the league. But you have a Super Bowl winning head coach in Doug Peterson. You've got a quarterback that you're paying a ton of money to. This is a team that knows how to win. You would think that this team will find a way to beat a New York Giants team that's still trying to figure it out. If they don't win tonight, wow, I don't know if any team out of that division is worthy of being in the playoffs, although someone is going to have to be in the playoffs winning that division.
But you know what the crazy thing is, D-Wood? For years, Howie Roseman has made more transactions than any other general manager in football. And you wonder, like, where are you getting all this money from? And I just don't wonder if the chickens have finally come home to roost.
The bill is coming due. Bill is coming due. It's coming due.
$64 million over the cap.
Right, right. Yeah. So now they can't go get the help that they need. And what happened is, and we've seen it happen before, the general manager was the last one to get the memo that the team was getting old, and those players that he depended on, like Graham, like Peters, Lane Johnson, Kelsey, are starting to get old, and you have major deficiencies in certain parts of your team, and you can't fill those holes with qualified players because you got such a big bill that you have to pay. And you know what I'm saying? He basically been buying players with credit cards. And that interest rate ballooned up. And especially if the salary cap drops next year, he's going to be in the same position. And it puts so much pressure on your scouting department to make sure that you draft well. And then going out and getting Rieger after we see what Claypool is doing, after we see what Jefferson is doing in Minnesota, it's like, I don't know if you should have been making evaluating bringing these players back, bringing DeSean Jackson back, put the band back together. Nah, man, this dude ain't been healthy consistently in I don't know how many years. He comes in, he teases you, and he pulls a hamstring. He's like a beautiful Ferrari, but the engine light is always on.
You're exactly right. And, you know, Alan, I think you referenced this. There's $64 million over the cap going into next year. They got all sorts of problems. Zach Ertz, who they just put on IR, he wanted a new contract. Jason Peters is playing on his last leg. They got all these injuries on the offensive line at the skill position. I mean, listen, if the division weren't so bad, you know, the Philadelphia would be in dire straits. But they actually have an opportunity to win this division. And once you get into the playoffs, it's anybody's game. But make no mistake about it, the bill is coming due, and it's going to be ugly in Philadelphia come offseason.
I mean, you'd think before November 3rd that they would want to sell because, you know, they have a bunch of players that they get rid of that would help them in that situation. But because of where they are in the division and the division's so bad, you don't want to do that because you want to stay competitive. Now, let's move over to the Jets, and I know we hate to talk about them, but let's do it anyway. Okay. We've been debating this. We've been kicking this around, and I wanted to get your take on it because I know Bart's take, and Bart has made a really good case for the other side. So when it comes to the Jets, the probability of them getting the number one pick is very high right now at 0-6. The question is, and it's not an easy answer, I don't think, is it Trevor or is it trade when you get that number one pick?
Oh, man. Man, that's a good question. I'm going to have to say, I will probably have to say Trevor, man, because here's a couple reasons why. Well, first of all, let me say this. I'm a believer in Sam Darnold's talent. I am. I think the organization has done terrible by him of surrounding him, you know, with subpar talent and constant change of the coaching staff and all of that. However, when you have an opportunity to draft a generational type of talent in Trevor Lawrence, I don't think you can pass that up. Because not only are you drafting the talent, but you're also drafting the fact that you're going to get this dude cheap for 5 years. And see, if you're the Jets, this is not an easy fix. It's not a quick turnaround. It's going to take some time and draft capital to turn this thing around. And the Jets got to make a decision on Sam Darnold this offseason.
So what?
They're going to have to exercise that fifth year option, which is going to jack up Sam Darnold's contract number. So I think if it comes down to it, I think you're going to have to draft Trevor Lawrence.
But tell me this. Well, so this is my case, right? And this is the counterpoint. Okay, if you do believe in Sam and say that you've done him wrong, yeah, you can pick up his option. It's going to move his salary up, but it's not going to be crazy. You still have another year to really evaluate him, and you still have the franchise tag that you don't want to use, but you have it at your disposal. Jacksonville Jaguars have two first-round draft picks this year, and they have the Minnesota Vikings, who are just starting to try and tank as well, second-round draft pick, and their second-round draft pick. So if they give you two ones and two twos, which essentially are top 35 picks, is that enough for you to say, you know what, now I have four picks in the first round this year, I got three this year and three next year, and I got three or four, because mine's, I got four or five top 35 picks in this year's draft, and then next year's draft, I got five top 35 picks in that draft too. Is that enough to fill up the roster with those type of premium players, and you got a boatload of cash?
It's basically like the Jimmy Johnson, Herschel Walker thing. I mean, rebuild your team on tons of picks and do it that way.
Yeah, plus you already got the one from Seattle as well, and your own, which is going to suck.
I will say under that scenario, if you can make that trade, you absolutely do it. I think you absolutely do it, you know, because now you're talking about an absurd amount of draft capital that you'll have at your disposal if you're able to make a trade like that with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I understand that Trevor Lawrence is this, you know, generational guy, but I think if you're a believer in Sam Darnold's talent, I think a lot of people do believe in Sam Darnold can be that guy. If you're getting the amount of draft capital that you just put out there, I would do that. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. All right, well, let's get to
the Cowboys.
Let's get to the Cowboys here because Bart had his take on it yesterday. The anonymous sources coming out talking about the coaching staff and there's no teachers here, how they're not prepared. They don't make good in-game adjustments. A lot of issues with Mike McCarthy and his staff. And I know you have something pretty strong to say about this as a former player.
Well, yeah, listen, man, first of all, let me say, as far as the coaching staff is concerned, I agree. I think that the coaches, both Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, they should be held accountable. I think that schematically and just as far as teaching, they're not holding up their end of the bargain. There's no question about that. But I just have a big problem with guys just running off to their favorite reporters and talking about and snitching on the coaches. Like, last time I turned on the film, I'm seeing star players fumbling the ball against the Arizona Cardinals. I'm seeing star players dropping balls, you know, in critical situations in the game. I'm seeing guys getting tossed out of the club on defense, you know, bad run fits, getting burned over the top in the passing game. So as much as we can crap on Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, the players aren't doing a damn thing on the field. But they want to be running to the reporters as anonymous sources talking about the coaches. Like, to me, that's just a bunch of BS, man. Like, at the end of the day, you got to look in the mirror and see what can you do, and you know, what can you do to improve your play and not run out there and snitch on everybody else to try to avoid the light being on you. Because guess what? The big eye in the sky never lies. Everybody sees who's turning it down, who's missing tackles, who's dropping balls, who's fumbling the ball. So that's just how I feel about it. I think it's bull, man, for people to be running to the media's anonymous sources.
Well, D. Wood, I wonder if the same people that are saying that the coaches don't teach, they can't make adjustments, has something to say to Woods when he said, "You can't expect me to play hard or us to play hard for 70 snaps." I'm like, what?
Boy,
like 70 snaps?
Boy,
that was a warm-up for us.
Bart, could you believe that man came out his mouth and said
and
that
put his name
to
it.
The media?
And put his name to it. Like, put his name and face to it. I mean, like, I appreciate it if that's how you feel.
Like, you can think it, but you can't say that.
Listen, we were on number one defense. Your first year there, we were the number one defense. We played more than 70 snaps a game. Like, bro, 70 snaps a game is not a lot. If you would have said 100, 90, 89, that's difference. But guess what? Your offense was putting up historical numbers. So how can Mike McCarthy not be able to make adjustments when Dak Prescott still leads the league in passer rating, meaning passing yards? So if he ain't played in 2 weeks, and he still leads the league in passing yards. So how do you mean to tell me that this team, that Mike McCarthy don't know how to coach offense? Now, listen, Mike Nolan, I had him in Baltimore. He's the one who converted the Ravens over to 3-4. I don't like him. He knows I don't like him, and he knows why. He know I might smack one of his eyes back to the same color because he got mismatched color eyeballs. But I digress. You know what I'm saying? One thing I do know is he's a teacher. He's a son of a coach. And I know that was a head coach, but one thing I can tell you about him is he's prepared. Now, what the issue is, the players are too dumb to be able to grasp what he's teaching, and he may not have to take that back and scale it back a little bit, but I'm watching defenses that can't communicate. I'm watching guys in snug formations crisscrossing and people running to each other because they're not communicating, saying, hey, limbo banjo, my way, your way. Instead, they're like, that's my man, and you run, and your man go behind his man, and then y'all running to each other looking like an episode of the Three Damn Stooges.
Bro, it's the Cowboys. When I watch the Cowboys, man,
it's the Cowboys'
sad,
way, man. That's how they built.
It's sad, man. It's and this thing could get a lot worse before it gets better. I can tell you that right now. If they're snitching and stuff right now, mm-hmm. while they're in contention, man, imagine in about 3 or 4 weeks, mm-hmm. it could be much worse.
You know what happens? You end up getting a fight or somebody gets sent home from practice. You know what that is, because somebody fighting in practice. You know how it go. We know how it go. They just want to get home quick so they can start.
You'd be like, man, I didn't want to play the rest of the season anyway. I'll just go ahead and get into a fight.
Yup, start packing up that pot. You know what I'm saying? Let's start getting U-Hauls packed up. It's going to be an early day, boys.
That's going to be interesting to see, and that just shows you about that division, just the condition that certainly it is.
And that's why the hell the Giants should have made a trade today, because all this craziness is going on within the division.
Again, the Eagles have to cut salary. The Washington's not even trying to win, and Dallas is a soap opera right now, and you're just going to sit there and not be aggressive and say, hey, you know what, we can advance the cause, and some of these young guys can get some great experience if – we just kind of put a little extra into it and win the division. Anyways, we're just shouting at the wall because Gettleman didn't do anything and he's now with the Ravens. Damian Woody, it's always great to have you on, my man. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Hey, all right. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Bart, did you see this? So World Series now takes a break tonight. It's now 1-1 after the Rays win last night. Arozarena, by the way, did a 22nd hit, which now ties him with Jeter for the most hits in a postseason by a rookie. Do we count it, though, because...
That dude look like he's 75 years old. That dude a rookie?
He's 24, I think.
You look old.
But you know how it is in baseball. They make you go through the minors for, like, you know, half your life. The Dodgers went with that bullpen game.
Dumb.
I mean, you start to get four outs and you move on. And A-Rod went off on Twitter about that, too.
It's stupid.
It's basically the same thing.
Put him down. I don't get it. I don't understand.
Snell had a good start. Yeah, look, it is what it is. It's clear you don't have enough pitching or you don't trust your pitching. Whatever it is, that's what they do.
Clearly, but that's the book. Because they got Buehler going, right? They got Buehler going against Morton. So you should say advantage. You know, that's kind of a push.
Morton's I think he's the key to everything.
He's been the
series
best.
Now. The series. Snell gave you a nice start. 9 strikeouts. He was terrific getting the no-hitter going.
Yeah.
And then it's amazing how he hits the fifth inning and just drops the hell off. And that was one that Cash knows this happens. So there's no I looked in his eye and said, no. We know what – give
we
me
know,
the ball.
We know what this looked like.
Yeah.
I've seen his movie before.
Well.
Like, nah, yeah. Good.
Yeah, but
it's crazy because he was criticized for the first game because he went with Glasnow too long, but it saved his bullpen so that he knew he can match his bullpen with Snell.
Mm-hmm.
So it was better because you think about the Dodgers bullpen, they were kind of taxed a little bit because from the night before because of Kershaw.
Now, before we get to some other stuff, I do want to mention this though. So and I think this is just again sign of the time. So I'm not using this as any type of indictment, but Game 1 of the World Series drew a record low amount of viewers on the Fox broadcast. Now it sounds like a lot when I tell you that 9.1 million people watched it. It's got a 5-1 rating, an 11 share.
Is that Thursday night football numbers?
No. It's a Tuesday. But so it's the lowest ever. In fact, it's the previous low was also the Rays.
Wow.
And it was, that market's not going to get a big rating. You know, it's not a big market. L.A. is a huge market, though. So you're surprised that the Dodgers didn't carry the night because the L.A. market was probably so lit up. But there's just not a lot of interest. Unless you're a diehard baseball fan that just watches because you're a fan, there's no other interest. Now, I say that, and that rating being an all-time low for baseball still made a mockery of the NBA Finals with LeBron James and another LA team, the Lakers.
Mm.
You would think again, LeBron, the Lakers, everybody should be watching that. And Game 1 of the Lakers Heat Finals.
You got me.
Drew just 7.4 million viewers on ABC, which is the lowest in the history of the finals.
You know what's crazy? Because I think people
So baseball did way better, way better than the NBA did.
Well, I think people
And yet, both of them all-time low. So it goes back to that discussion. Are people just not watching, or are they watching differently? We got to learn this because our business is changing. It really is. People are consuming things differently, or they're just not willing to tune in because there's so much else to do now, whether it's Netflix, Disney Plus, or anything else. And I'll just watch the highlights because I'm investing 2-3 hours of my life into something where I'm not emotionally invested because it's not my team. But I'm surprised at the LeBron thing. I really am. I cannot believe that LeBron and the Lakers couldn't draw enough attention to the NBA Finals. But the Dodgers, either. So it's two LA teams, and you're still not getting enough sizzle.
Yeah, see, for me, what I'm saying is, and why I think maybe that's the reason it did that, is I think maybe because they just knew that the NBA Finals was a foregone conclusion that LeBron was going to win. I think everybody's watching this like Cinderella team in the race, but we think, are they really a Cinderella team? Because they won 90 last year.
Yeah, they were the number one team. They're the American League's best team.
And maybe a couple of more people want to see the Dodgers. You know, we all love a good car crash, right? So we all watching it, and we saw like, damn, Kershaw pitched well. We want him to go.
But they're not hate. It's one thing if they were hateable, and you just like you know. I hate to say it, but you wonder if the Astros were in this thing, knowing that the Dodgers and Astros have that little bit of issue.
Yeah.
A lot of trash talking, and it's the Astros. They're notorious now for cheating. Would that have changed? And right, and in this Houston market, would that change the ratings? Would people be more invested because it's almost like you want to see them lose? I don't know. All I know is this. You know, you need the Yankees on that stage. And I also think if you're the NBA, you need to wake this New York market up. You do have Kyrie and KD, but if you don't get the Knicks going here, I'm telling you, this league has got to understand. It's cute that the small markets, you gave Zion to New Orleans. The small markets have their players, and they're surviving, and Devin Booker in Phoenix. But it's really in the long run. It really doesn't make sense for the league in the long run. You are not – the New York market has got to wake the hell up, and the league has got to make sure that that happens. All right, 800-919-3776. Quick call here. Gerald in New Jersey. Go ahead, Gerald.
Yeah, I listen to you guys about almost every day. I'm a first-time caller, and I really like you guys' show.
Thank you.
First of all, I agree with what you guys were saying about the Cowboys and how the defense is not communicating, and you can actually see it. I mean, I'm watching it on TV. I coach myself, so I can actually see it. And tape don't lie. So I agree with you guys with that. But now with the Giants and the Eagles game, I think it's a big game for both teams. I mean, I really think that the Giants are, and I'm talking as a Giants fan, so I am a Giants fan, but I see them starting to click a little bit. Now, I'm not going to get too far, like a lot of Giants fans will probably do, but I really see them trying to click now, and I think they're at a moment now where they can actually win this game tonight. So, I mean, I guess we'll see, but my hopes are, pretty high right now from what I've seen from the last couple of weeks, minus that 49ers game.
And I mean, this can be something like where it sends one team season going one direction, and another team going another direction. Like we've seen that before. Like I said before, I can remember.
I think it's more devastating to the Eagles if they lose, not the Giants.
Right.
The Giants know that they're kind of building, but if the Eagles lose this game, it is devastating.
Yeah, but the Giants have hope. And if you don't want to crush hope, this allows you to get maximum effort, maximum focus from your team when they feel like, man, we're still in it. It's November and we're still in it. And then they continue to play hard because this season's going to come down to a battle of attrition because people end up getting hurt and that's what happens. And if you got a healthy 11, that could be enough to get you over the finish line.
Great point. All right, let's do more of this in audio files.
The audio file.
Later in the show. Speaking of the Giants and the fact that they are playing the Eagles, who they haven't beaten, I think it's 7 in a row they've lost to them, 10 of the last 11 or something like that, or 9 of the last 10.
It's up there.
And overall, they haven't beaten Dallas or Philly. It's like 0-14 against their two division rivals. Logan Ryan, new to the team, but understanding of the history, says he's not concerned about that stuff.
You know, it was my first time here, and I know we lost 11 of the last 12 or whatever that may be, but that has no you know, significance to this one. You know, I don't really, streaks all come to an end. I remember when I got to Tennessee, there was not one good streak ever. Like, we lost this man to Indy and never beat Andrew Luck and never beat this and then the AFC Championship. So I really don't care. It's going to come down to me and Carson Wentz and the Giants and the Eagles and everyone else out there who's playing the game. So I love, you know, salute to Brian Dawkins and Strahan and all these guys, but they're not going to help us out there today. Are out there on Thursday night. We got to go out there and execute and do what Joe Judge asked us to do, and they're going to do what Doug Peterson asked them to do. And we're going to see, you know, may the best man win, the toughest man win. And I think that we're pretty tough, and I think we're going to go out there and try to, you know, it's Thursday night. You know, nobody feels great. My body's not going to feel great, but I'm going to go out there and will it, and we'll see what happens.
Oh, nice. That game tonight again, 8:20. It's Fox will have the broadcast.
You hear that, though? Brandon is starting to sink in. We're a tough team. Tough. That's what happens. When you start saying something enough and it's a point of emphasis, your players start regurgitating it without them even knowing that they're saying it. It's like that subliminal message that just stick in your head. Man, Joe Judge is starting to do some Jedi mind tricks. I see it happening.
You got to see, yeah. I mean, that's what he's trying to do there, plant those seeds and then let it grow into something, and that's why you want to see if they can have even just a little bit of success. Be curious to see what this team can do in such a bad division. Meanwhile, Odell Beckham Jr., who, as we told you the other day, said that COVID would never enter his body. It just has an understanding with him.
I punched COVID in the face.
He's trying to be cute, but obviously not.
Yeah, he can't.
But there's more to Odell, though, that he's been talking about, which includes how people, you know, how he gets upset on the sideline and he has these outbursts and people react to him. Here's what he said.
I'm pissed, and at this point, I really don't care to keep trying to make myself look like a good guy into the world and all that shit. Because I am who I am. I got pulled out of the game. The coach said this was the best decision. It's 8 minutes left. And for me, I'd rather take my open like a man. I'd rather take my win the same way. I want to be out there to the last whistle competing. I'm kind of over trying to play the right thing because, you know, I love them to death. But there's people who have plenty of rings and consider the GOAT. And they do things on the sideline and they get away with it. And it's classified as passion because they may have something behind their legacy or whatever it is. And to me, bro, we love this that much. It means that much.
Newsflash, Odell. Life isn't fair. Sometimes perception can become reality. And the fact that you have these kind of hiccups in front of the public eye, understanding that you did a great job in marketing yourself, but the issue that comes along with that, making yourself such a high profile person, when you speak, people listen, when you do things, people watch, and they're going to have an opinion about it. If you didn't want that to happen, you could have been like Mike Trout. You could have just been collecting your check and not saying nothing, and nobody would have took interest in you. The fact that now 8 scholarships are gone because of LSU, because you wanted to splash for the camera and be yourself be a good guy and give up $2,000.
Third level, though, is they were going after the booster that was giving guys jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
What Odell did was a small part of it, but he's a name, so they put him as part of
my point. And why do you think his name was put there instead of the booster? Because he's Odell Beckham. You have to understand who you are and the weight you carry. And instead of using it for stuff that we can come on Sports Talks Radio and criticize, use it for something that we can say, man, look what this guy did and put you on a pedestal. Understand the power and the influence that you have specifically, Odell. You can't blame anybody. Listen, I never understood why Tim Tebow gets more opportunities than anybody to say, hey, I want to play baseball. Hell, I want to be a professional bowler. Will somebody put me on a tour today? No. But I can't get mad at Tim Tebow because, you know, because he has a following and whatever he does, he's going to get attention with it. That's just what it is. I'm not him.
Professional bowler.
I did. Pete Weber III, baby. My hero.
Last but not least, Stan Van Gundy was hired by the New Orleans Pelicans to be their head coach. So he's back on the sidelines. Ooh. Now, we'll see if Jeff gets the job in Houston. But Stan Van Gundy is hired by the Pelicans. It's an interesting hire, and I'll explain what I think of it in a minute. But here's Woj with SVP on the hire.
David Griffin, the executive VP in New Orleans, did not know Stan Van Gundy very well before this process started. They've both been in the league a long time, but just didn't have a relationship and spent a lot of time here over the last several weeks getting to know each other and talking through a lot of things about what New Orleans wanted for that roster and what they wanted for that team was a teacher. And you have a combination of some very talented young players, obviously Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and down, but you've got Drew Holiday, you've got vet J.J. Redick. This is a team that can make a jump into the playoffs. That was important, his ability as a teacher, but also how good defensively Stan Van Gundy's teams have been through the years. And those were all part of the conversations that he had with David Griffin. And they talked a lot about how Stan Van Gundy might do some things differently this time in a different time in the league as head coach.
That's the key part there, Bart, because as I said this to you when we were talking off air before, you asked me, like, why would they hire him? And that's why you had Alvin Gentry, you had an older experienced coach. They weren't going to go with a young coach because they have a young team, especially with Zion. So the point was you want somebody in there that's been there, that can coach up a team, that can teach, but also isn't going to get out coached on the sideline because of his inexperience. So Stan fits those. He checks those boxes. Now, he has to change his ways. He knows it because of obviously his relationship and the way things melted down when he was in Orlando with Dwight Howard. And that was real. Like, I was there that day. That was the weirdest thing to see, that whole thing break down. So you have that. And then on top of it, you have Zion, who isn't the same person as Dwight. But that is something to watch, how Stan can coach Zion. Because in the end, that's all that matters. You've got to make that kid a superstar. And the one thing you got to do, and I'm going to say it, is you got to make him willing to work. Zion, like Dwight, relies a lot on his own physical talent and gets away with it and has always gotten away with it. That's going to catch up to him in time. And they're trying to convince him that why wait for it to catch up to you? You wonder if Stan can reach him. That's the thing to watch. Nothing else is going to matter if he has to reach Zion Williamson.
I mean, you talk about, you know, Dwight was a different personality, especially, you know, he started feeling himself a little bit.
Yeah, but, that happened. Yeah.
But then I go to Detroit where Stan was before, and his relationship with Andre Drummond. Mm-hmm. Drummond, who's a quiet guy, who's meek and soft-spoken, but the same issues that Zion had, you know, with the weight issues and being able to become a professional conditioning. He has to tread lightly there. Because Drummond was the better player, but Zion's on a different level as far as his stardom.
You've got to be connected. Your stars in the NBA, if your coach and star are connected, then you are absolutely going to win. But if that doesn't happen, then you're not going to last. And we'll see if Stan can do that in New Orleans. I love Stan. He's smart. He's a great coach. But personality-wise, how he deals with players has always been something that people have kept an eye on. So we'll see what happens there because it's very important to the league for Zion to become the star that everybody hopes he becomes.
Let's get a little extra money in your pocket.
Cheese and sour cream on the taco.
This is Lunch Money.
All right, we'll make our picks. We'll do the rest of them tomorrow, but we'll make our pick because the Giants are playing tonight. So it's Eagles, Giants. Eagles are laying 4.5 at home. And Bart, I'll make it quick and make it easy. I'm taking the Eagles here.
Do I even need to talk? Because that's kind of where I'm going as well. I mean, I just think
you got to make it official.
Well, I'm going to take the Eagles as well. I just believe that the Eagles have faced the stiffer competition the last couple of weeks, even though they haven't been able to get the win. They played the Ravens tough after coming out in a big deficit, being down like 21 points to be 1 2-point conversion from tying it. And then the week before that, they played the Steelers well. Now, this is the issue. Both teams have great run defenses, but Miles Sanders won't play tonight. So I'm trying to figure out, are we going to see a lot of Jalen Hurts today as far as some type of wildcat type of Taysom Hill type of role, because they have to find a way to generate some yards on the ground. They have to be creative.
Turnovers are key because both teams will turn it over. Wentz has had issues, obviously, 9 interceptions. Daniel Jones, we know he has 6 picks and 3 fumbles. He's got that issue. And both teams get after the quarterback. You know, both teams are giving up a ton of sacks. So, you know, a lot of that stuff. Oh, this could be a sloppy game. It could be one of those crazy games. So,
two bad
it always
teams
usually is on a Thursday,
game.
Right?
Two bad
so
games.
So we'll see. Yeah. Two bad teams. We're trying to play for the division. All right, but we'll put our daily fantasy team together based off this game. And what we've got is Carson Wentz will be our quarterback, our MVP. Hmm. Boston Scott's going to get a lot of now reps because of the Sanders injury that you referenced. So we'll take him as well. Darius Slayton's been terrific for the Giants. So we'll take him and Devin Freeman. And then Travis Fulgham has been a nice player for the Eagles, and we'll grab him as well.
Man, he's been lighting up the scoreboard, man. Touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, taking advantage of the fact that Rieger isn't around.
Yeah. So to me, so there's our team. We'll see how we do. But the picks, I think, again, the 4.5, I think you go Eagles just for all the reasons that you said. You just sort of believe in the fact that they have been very competitive for the most part. But it's, and the Giants just struggle, especially in Philly. Now, no, there'll be about 6,000 people, I think. Right? There's going to be a small amount of people allowed in the building at the link, but
yeah,
don't know if it'll make it. But whoever it is, you know they'll still make it uncomfortable for the visitors. It always seems to be a thing.
Better have the jail open.
It's always something, right? That's what's going on. It'd be very interesting to see. But we'll get into the Jets tomorrow because there's a very interesting take on the Jets about the comparison of how bad, historically bad, this team is compared to one of the previous historically bad teams. And that would be, of course, the Rich Kotite era. And Keyshawn Johnson had something interesting to say. We'll discuss tomorrow. All that tomorrow. Enjoy the Giant game tonight, Bart. I'll see you tomorrow.
Holla. Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.